Can you hit all those high notes in Jersey Boys?
Yeah, I wore my extra tight underpants.
Okay.
Oh, what a night. Late December back in 63. What a very special time for me. Cause I remember what a night.
Welcome to another fabulous episode of All the Vegas, the definitive Vegas entertainment podcast presented by Las Vegas Weekly Magazine. As always, coming to you from just off the world famous Las Vegas Strip at the Space. I'm not famous, but I am Brock, your host. And the relatively famous Mark Chinook is your other host.
Keyword relatively. I like that. That's good.
We've been bringing you All the Vegas for a few months now, and that means talking to a lot of people that you know from shows and music and restaurants, and people you don't know from kind of behind the Vegas scenes. And everyone's all part of this great, big, fun thing. But today, All the Vegas means a bona fide strip headliner. Our guest today has set an impossible standard for all other America's Got Talent competitors by winning the show's second season and going on to star in his own incredibly popular show on the strip for almost a decade now. An amazing singer, ventriloquist, and comedian. I feel silly even saying these things because he's a household name and you already know all of these things. Terry Fader, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. This is fun. I like this setup. Very cool. Thanks. Thanks for being here, man. This is really cool.
Yeah.
We did just redo the studio here at the Space for this episode. We wanted to impress Terry.
So just for Terry.
It's
just
and it's working.
Terry. The minute you guys leave, this all goes away.
They're tearing it down.
Yeah, folding chair and a cot.
You just got back from a summer vacation of sorts, right? Where did you go?
I went to Europe. I went to Italy and Paris. So that's France, but you know we only stayed in Paris. But we went to four places in Italy. We went to Rome, Venice, Tuscany, and Florence in Italy, and it was a blast. Gosh, I had so much fun.
How long did they let you free for?
It was a 2-week vacation, and you know, we got to think it's so funny because it happened really quickly. It's probably March, maybe even April, and our time off was in July. And my wife's funny because I adore her. She's the most wonderful woman in the world, but she cannot make a decision. She's like, you know, Harry Met Sally, you know, well, yes, I want the pie, but I want the ice cream on the side. But if you can heat the ice cream, if you can heat the pie, then put the ice cream on top. And if you can, you know, and if then I don't want ice cream, if you can't heat it, I want just, you know, that's my wife.
We'll make sure this interview gets to her real quick.
Oh no, she'll know. She'll absolutely know. I'm like, what do you want to do? I don't know. I'd like to go to Italy. I don't know. So finally, one day we went to this appointment, and she had a nail appointment or something, and she was in there for an hour and a half or something, and I got on the phone and I booked a trip to Italy. And she walked out and I said, honey, we're going to Italy. What? So that's pretty much how it happened. And I just said, you know, I'm just tired. I want to go, and you want to go. And so we're just going to, you know, so we did it, and it was a blast. I had so much fun. I learned how to make pasta. And then, like homemade, like with just the wheat and the, what do they call that stuff? Similac? No, not Similac. That's for kids, right? I don't remember what it's called. It's
semolina.
What is it?
Semolina.
Is it semolina? I don't know. It's the stuff you put in with the wheat. And then eggs, and you just, you know, do it. And I even got pictures of myself, but I did it at home and made pasta for us last week. And
yeah, I'd eat my face off if I was in Italy for a week.
I think
I'm only allowed to go to Italy for like 24 hours.
Although I have to say, the food, we were expecting this gigantic jump in quality of food. And we were kind of talking about it about halfway through our Italy trip. And she goes, you know, it's weird, the food's really, really good, but I when she went 20 years ago, you know, she didn't go to Italy, but she went to Europe, and she said, oh my God, the food was so just off the chain, amazing, and I don't understand why it doesn't feel that way now. And I came up with, I think I know why, and it's because food in America, and since the Food Channel came along, I mean, we get the best of the best, and especially here in Vegas, my goodness, we have the best chefs in the world. So food has raised the bar in America so much that there's not this gigantic jump when you go to Italy or Europe anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's great food, but we have great food here too. So you're not, you know, you don't have to go there anymore for great food.
How was Paris?
amazing. And of course, my first thing was to go to Disneyland Paris.
Of course. You're Mickey man. You're a Mickey man.
I love Mickey and I love Disney and Charlie Brown. And, you know, my house is full of Charlie Brown and Mickey Mouse and everything else. So my wife is like, so what are we going to do? I said, well, we're going to Disneyland Paris. We stayed at the Disneyland Paris Hotel, and we had dinner on top of the Eiffel Tower, which was fun. Well, not on top, in the middle. And then we just spent a couple of days at the George Sank, which is their, you know, Four Seasons. It's and then just wandered around Paris and did some shopping and had a lot of fun. It was a blast.
I love Paris. I'm a Paris guy. I speak French, so it helps.
Oh, that definitely would help.
My wife loves going, and you could literally, like you just said, walk around for days. And I'm okay with a baguette and a coffee.
Yeah, that's kind of what we did. We didn't have an agenda. We just said we spent three full days in Paris and just wandered wherever we wanted. Got in a cab or got on a bus and said, you know, let's go to, you know, wherever, Notre Dame. And we went to Shakespeare and Company. Have you been there?
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool place, isn't it?
And one of the cool spots where I went to is the La Pangile up the hill. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they all hung out, you know, Einstein and all the artists, and Steve Martin wrote a play based on that bar. Nice. And it's, you know, it takes place with all the icons of the day hanging out at this bar up
fantastic.
In Paris. Yeah, it's awesome.
What a cool place, yeah. And, cool. you know, we had just had a ball. It was really, really busy in Italy. I mean, they had us going. We were on a tour group, and they had us going from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., and, man, we were tired. So our first day in Paris, we get to our hotel, and it was like, why don't we just stay in? And so we just stayed in. Of course, we had a really nice suite that overlooked the city, and we had a bottle of champagne, and we just drank a bottle of champagne and ordered room service all day, and so it was great.
Perfect.
That was a great way to spend a day in Paris.
When you get the chance to travel, are you observing and thinking about things that are going to impact your show somehow, or picking up little behaviors that you're noticing?
I do. And you know, I can't really help not, I can't help doing that because it's just what I do. It's anyone who's a comedian is an observer of the human condition and the world around them. And so I'm always looking for the humor. I'm always looking for something funny in every situation. And I grew up in a very traumatic childhood with a lot of trauma and a lot of violence and abuse. And my escape from that was humor. You know, my brother and my sister, we were all, you know, terrified to go home because we didn't know what was going to happen to us. And so I would just crack jokes and keep us laughing the whole time. So it kind of helped get us through that. So I think that's really where I think a lot of comedians come from traumatic backgrounds too. Mm-hmm. So some of us deal with it in certain ways and become alcoholics and drug addicts, and some of us become comedians, and that's the direction I went.
So did that kind of come first then? Did cracking jokes as a defense mechanism maybe come before singing, before ventriloquism?
I think impressions came first. I was talking at 9 months, and at 9 months I couldn't even walk. And people would, you know, I get the stories from my mother, and she says that people would say things like hippopotamus and helicopter to this little baby that's in a crib, and I would repeat it back to them. So I think that wow. whole ability to impersonate came quickly. I was my first thing. So I would hear and mimic anything and everything. And then, of course, growing up, same thing. I would, you know, I was always doing, if I heard a sound, I would mimic the sound, or if I heard a person, I would mimic the voice. And then I was singing from the time I was about two. I had a little record player, and I would get up and sing in front of people. And always comedy, always making, always funny. I was class clown every single year of my schooling. You know, I was class clown because I was always trying to find the funny, the joke in everything. And then when I was 10, I found a book on how to be a ventriloquist, and it kind of changed everything. I didn't do it. I had seen really bad ventriloquists, and even like when I was 5, I remember a ventriloquist came to our church, and I remember thinking, this guy's terrible. I mean, most kids wouldn't do that. You know, most kids would be like, oh, look, it's a puppet. You know, I'm like, this guy's terrible. It never occurred to me to become one, but then when I found this book, it looked like fun, so I checked it out of my school library. And then I took it home, and about an hour I was talking without moving my lips. So I thought, well, I'll try this. And I went and bought a little puppet at Sears They used to sell puppets at Sears, if you can believe it. And I just walked in, and there it was, you know. And so I bought this little puppet and started doing shows for my friends.
I think I had one, like a doll.
You probably did, yeah.
And I don't want to sound, like, racially wrong, but it was a black doll in a box. And it was a ventriloquist doll. It came with a book.
Mm-hmm.
I might have been, like, 8.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the 80s.
I have a black puppet. A lot of people have black puppets, and there's a hilarious.
You're not alone.
I'm not alone. Okay, good.
No.
Okay, good.
No, there's a hilarious movie called Dumbstruck. I'm in it.
Yeah,
and it's kind of that shows chronicles me going through America's Got Talent. It's pretty cool movie, and it was happened right after for me. So they were right there on, you know, when I signed the deal with the Mirage, and it's really cool to kind of look back. But there's this white kid with a black puppet, and it's hysterical. His dad's like, I don't know why he picked a black puppet. You know, it's like, that's a different generation, because, you know, we're like, we don't care, you know. But it was kind of funny to see his dad was just so confused, you know. But, you cannot believe how many people I talk to that say, oh, I had a puppet when I was a kid. You know, it's amazing how many people wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And how few turned into ventriloquists.
Yeah, it's a real niche type of thing. And, you know, people are like, can anybody be a ventriloquist? And I'm like, yes, anyone can be a ventriloquist. There's only going to be a few good ones. And the reason for this, I think it's the same thing. Like, you know, a lot of people can sing, but there's only one Celine Dion. You know, you got to be born with the ability to do things that other people can't do. In order to be really great at something. So it's not like you can just say, well, I'm going to become the greatest ventriloquist ever. If you don't have the talent, you're going to have to find something else to be the greatest at, you know.
You got to put in the work, too. Like, you're constantly working and evolving and changing, and I think that's a testament to what you're saying. Like, I've met Celine Dion a few times, and her work ethic is unlike any other vocalist that I've ever met or come to know. So
no, you're
I think
right.
That
and if you're not willing, most people are not willing to put that kind of time and effort in. Most people just don't have that in them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if you're born with it. I don't know if it's, you know, it could have been, you know, nature versus nurture. I don't know, you know. Maybe a part of my escape was working on what I loved. Because we were basically slaves. I mean, our parents made us work sometimes 8, you know, hours a day and go to school. And then there were times when they would make us work 36 straight hours with no sleep. We had a house restoration business. And we'd have to go in, and if we got a bunch of apartments to be done, they had to be done over the weekend. And we just had to work. And then we were the only employees. So I think part of my escape was, I didn't want to do that as my life. I wanted to be a ventriloquist and a comedian. So I would practice my ventriloquism. I would listen to the radio and sing along to the radio without moving my lips so I could practice my ventriloquism. And then I would write routines and create characters while I was, you know, doing that. So that was my escape. But also, and I still do that, you know, all the time. Even when I'm on vacation, I'm like, you know, I come up with an idea and I'll write it down. And my wife's like, that's great. Now get back to vacationing. You know, it's really hard for me to vacation because I love what I do so much. So for me, it's play. I even brought a puppet along to Italy. And on our tour group, I told the guides, they all knew who I was. And I said, hey, if you want, I'll perform. And I did. I did about a 15-minute show for our entire tour group. Just awesome. Impromptu, and, you know, a cappella, and had a ball.
Yeah,
wrote some original jokes for the about the tour and about what we were doing. And it was a ball.
Does the show now, does it still feel like work? That's a weird way to put it, but what's the most challenging part of your show right now?
It's hard to say because I love it so much. No, and it never has felt like work. It's I'd rather, you know, a week into my vacation, I'm like, God, I can't wait to get back. I just love stepping on that stage. You know, people are like, you need to skydive. You need to, you know, I'm like, nope. I walk on that stage, and that adrenaline rush, better than anything I could get anywhere else doing anything else. And I think a lot of people live mundane lives in their minds. So they're like, oh, man, I got to go skiing, or I got to go to that. I'm like, nope, don't need to do any of that. Just get me on that stage, and that's my adrenaline rush. I think the most challenging part is doing something like I just put in, and you know, we lost Aretha today. I just put in Aretha Franklin. And boy, you know, hitting some of those high notes without moving my lips. I can hit them with my lips moving. That's fine. But man, I close the mouth and try to hit them, and it's just painfully hard. But, you know, again, I put in the work, and I do the homework. And then by the time I get on stage and start doing it, then it's... And the funny thing is, it always takes a couple of weeks of doing it in the show to really get it solidified. And the reason is, I learned this early on, there's a different, your body goes through a completely different state when you're on stage in front of people than you are when you're off stage or when you're, there's no one there. And I don't know if it's adrenaline, I don't know what it is, but everything changes when I've got an audience. So I can sit there and it's like, man, this sounds perfect. And then I get in front of an audience and everything is different. So I have to actually, it takes about 2 weeks of doing it in the show to get that comfort zone and find that sweet spot where, and the funny thing is, you know, and I guess the best way to describe it is, so like if I'm doing, you know, what you want, baby, I got it. What you need. I have to find a place, and I'm doing that without moving my lips for those of you listening. I have to find this area in my throat, in the back of my throat, where I can hit that high note, you know, without it, without straining and without, and so it, that's where the work goes in, is trying to figure out on those high notes. And that's really the most tough part of my job is doing that, finding,
One of the newer parts of your show, you have a duet between Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney. Which is pretty cool, being a kid of the 80s.
Yeah.
That was maybe one of my favorite parts of the show. Nice. That seems like that would be pretty challenging.
Yeah, it is. And doing the show left, doing a puppet left hand is very, very difficult. I've never done anything with my left hand. So I knew I was going to put this in. I knew I was going to have Paul McCartney on my left hand. So
there was a joke there. I just
No. Yeah, we know what the joke is. I've told that many times before.
I don't believe
he's doing things with my left hand. Feels like another person.
You for a minute, Fader, you're lying to us.
So doing a show, but I actually, to prepare to do the Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney, I actually switched hands for an entire week in my show, and I did the entire show left-handed, with all the puppets, and I had never done that before, and it was tough, but I did it. And it really got me used to, you know, using the left hand with you know, Paul McCartney on this hand and you know, Michael Jackson. It sounds like a porn video, doesn't it?
I was holding back over here. I was just holding back and letting you go.
Left hand. I had a guy on each hand. But, yeah, believe me, my brain always goes to the jokes, too. If you knew what I filtered, you had no idea.
But right, our listeners are fine. They want to know more. You don't have to filter here.
But it's fun. It's really fun to have that dynamic. And I have had a bit in my show where I did Bing Crosby and David Bowie singing Little Drummer Boy. You remember that iconic moment? And I have a David Bowie puppet, and they're both hard. So let's go to that joke. No, they're actually both wooden puppets. So it's different because you have to hold a stick.
Sure do.
And we're continuing to go there. You actually have to and you run it with these little triggers with each hand. And Paul McCartney is soft. This is so fun.
We're going to have to ask Mark to leave the studio at this point.
Paul McCartney is more like a Muppet, so he's got that. He's, you know, you just like put your hand in, and you actually run the mouth, you know, with your thumb and fingers. You're very dexterous thumb and fingers, you know. That's why my wife loves me.
Jeez. I love it. What character do people ask you the most about, and what do they want to see? Because you've got so many, you know, and I've been fortunate enough to go into his dressing room, and I'm sure you've been back there, and there's stuff everywhere.
I'm going to shock you, and believe me, I'm as shocked as anybody, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The number one character now that I get asked about
Trump. It's got to be.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I was afraid because there's such a huge polarization. So, you know, I don't do political, which is, you know, I just don't want to do, because if, no matter what you do politically, you're going to irritate, you're going to piss off half of the audience. They're, you know, so I'm thinking, okay, so when Donald Trump announced his candidacy, I'm going, okay, well, I could never do a Hillary Clinton because all we know of her is politics. Mm-hmm. I could never do a Obama or a George W. Bush because they are politicians. That's all we know of them. Trump transcends that. You know, we've got Trump Tower. We've got the, you know, he was with the, what, Miss Universe, and he had you're fired. He's kind of a pop culture icon that it happened to be running for president, and now he is president. So I don't go for political. I go for we have fun with his hair, and we have fun with the fact that he says words like bigly, and you know, he's so that's where I go for that. And interestingly, everyone likes it. So whether you love him or hate him, it's funny. Yeah. And that's really what I was going for, because boy, you know, and so I was really worried because, you know, there's this polarization, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, I may be investing a lot of money in this thing, and it may just, I may be able to use it a week, and it was so popular that I do a lot of road shows. I do about between 40 and 50 road shows a year. So I'll, on my weekends when I don't have to perform, I'll head over to, like this weekend, I'm going to, Mississippi and Missouri, and I'm doing, and then I'm, is it Missouri, BJ? Two in Mississippi. Okay. Two in Mississippi. And then next week I'm going to, Arizona and New Mexico. And so, the most number one requested, they're like, oh my gosh, are you bringing Donald Trump? And I'm like, I guess so. So I had to have a second one made so that I could travel, because I always have a spare set here in case some, God forbid, something happens and I lose something. I've got
lose
my Mirage.
Your luggage.
I got my Mirage puppets, yes.
Yeah.
So so I had to have a second one made, and people absolutely love it. It's just funny. But again, I don't do politics. So regardless of, you know, I had a good friend of mine who's a Democrat. And after the show, he goes, I really liked that. He goes, I can't stand Donald Trump, but you did a really good job kind of balancing that, you know? And so,
your version is the preferred.
Yeah.
Is there a puppet you don't check? Like, is it when you travel and you carry it on? Like, you'd rather check your laptop and bring a puppet on?
Do you have, I have no idea. I don't do it anymore. I have a team. Do we check? Okay, do we have any puppets that go on? do they carry Winston, or do they ship everything? I think we ship them.
Occasionally, yes.
Yeah.
If when time mm-hmm. trains.
Yeah, but we will. But I don't do it. I know. I used to have to, but now.
Because what happens when you show up?
Like, just make sure the puppets are there, you know? It's really nice.
I wasn't sure. You might have a superstition where you're like, hey, he's with me.
And it's funny because there's another ventriloquist, and I'm not going to mention
names.
You know,
names, the video at the airport. I see you when I travel with McCarran. I look up. There you are on the flat screen.
And I do. I have.
And you put him through the belt.
Well, occasionally I'll have to, like, fly to L.A., and I will bring him in the little case that
you
we
see
have.
You know the video I'm talking
so,
about.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's like there's other ventriloquists who are like, oh, nobody touches my puppets but me. And I'm like, you know, they're puppets. I don't care. You get them set up, and I'll just walk on stage and do them, you know. I do not have a special relationship with the puppets. They're freaking puppets. They don't have feelings. They're, you know, they don't care who I like best. And I can tell you exactly who I like best and which ones I enjoy doing the most, because they couldn't care less.
I love it.
Jeff Dunham told me once that he thinks of his characters, basically he thinks of himself and his characters as a team, and he's always thinking in kind of multiple personality mode.
Cuckoo.
Sounds like that's not your approach, Terry.
No, I'm kidding. No, everybody has a different take, and you know, these are characters that I have created. They're not parts of my personality, because I'm not a cougar. You know, I'm not very fabulous. I'm still fabulous. I don't have that character in me. They're characters that I create and have fun with and love. I love the characters. I love creating. I love performing the characters. There are some that I enjoy performing more. There are some that I love every character. I would not. Otherwise, it would not. You know, and that comes across on stage, that I love the characters. But, you know, we're not a team. It's me. And I'm glad. I want people to not remember that I'm on stage. I want people to think they've just watched 11 or 12 different people on stage. I love that. So I don't mind not getting the credit.
That's cool.
Well, I have no problem with
you. Funny you mention that, because, you know, bringing up a gig that I had, I was Timon in The Lion King.
Mm.
And so I have a puppet background, a little one, just telling you, a little one. And so
that's a big job.
It's a big puppet. It was a 4-footer. So, which means I'm only about 3 inches taller than the puppet.
Was it hard or soft?
Well, it depends. Depends. There were parts of him that were hard, and there was parts that were soft. But, you know, I would carry this puppet on stage. It was attached at my feet, at my midsection, and at my temples. So when I would turn my head, his head would turn. My right hand was in his mouth, and my left hand carried his arm. And, you know, my costume that I wore was sort of blended into the jungle landscape, and Timon, this bright orange meerkat, stood in front of me, And that was the whole point. You know, you want to do the gig so that they're not watching you.
No, yeah.
They're watching
this
puppet.
You want to disappear. And I'm the same way. I
loved
don't mind.
That job.
And the great part about doing that is, you know, and not, I don't mind that I disappear. I want you to think that what I do is easy. And I want you to feel like those puppets. And I love this. And I get this every single time I perform. I'll sing a couple of songs by myself on stage. And people are like, oh my God, I didn't know you could sing. And it's like, every single one of my puppets sings. Yeah. And none of them do it without me. Yeah. But the sense of suspension of disbelief is so real that they just forget that I'm doing it. They really don't think of me as the one doing it. And I love that. And it's also fun to remind them, because when you remind them, it gets a laugh, because they're like, oh my gosh, that's right. He is, you know, the one doing that.
Yeah, you're winning at that point. You know, that's
yeah.
It tells you you're doing it right, man.
And it's, I think, awesome. Anyone who's great at what they do makes it look easy. You know, you watch like in the NFL, and you kind of, and there's a little something inside that goes, I could do that. No. You know, it's like, yeah, I could do that, and they're like, no, none of us could. You know, but and the greats make it look so easy. The greats make it look like, and that's really what you want to do, is you want to get to a point where people feel like they could do it. And then when they try, they realize how hard it is. You know, you pick up one of my puppets and you're like, oh my gosh, this is really complicated, you know, but you want it to be flawless and just kind of blend in as if it's nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's been 9 years plus, I guess, at mm-hmm. Mirage. Now you're really a fixture in the Vegas entertainment community. You're always out and about and doing different things. What was it like, though, I wonder, when you first signed that first deal? And you knew you were going to be a Las Vegan. You were going to be here for the long haul. What were your impressions of the city then, and what did that feel like?
You know, I fell in love with the city at the very beginning. Never had a part where I really thought I was going to be homesick. But then, you know, I grew up in Dallas and never lived anywhere but Dallas, Texas, my whole life. But for 20 years preceding the Mirage gig, or the Vegas gig, because I started for a year and I did the Hilton, I was on the road. So I was traveling about 11 months out of the 12, and that's not straight 11 months and I had a month off. I had, you know, I'd be gone for 2 months and then I would have 3 days off, and then I would be gone for another month and I would have a week off. And then, so that's how it worked. And all told, I was on the road about 11 months out of the year. So I was living out of a suitcase and I was living in hotels. And so here I get this Vegas gig. And the funny thing is that I had been dreaming of it since I was a kid. I was like, okay, that's what I want to do, is I want to get a Vegas show. I want to be a headliner in Vegas and have my own theater. And that's, to me, then I don't have to travel and people will come and see me. And just finally gave up about 40. When I was 40, I thought, the dream's not going to happen, you know. And then 42, I went on America's Got Talent and everything. All my dreams came true. And the funny thing is that it didn't really hit me, but I was so busy. You know, it's like I signed this deal and then I fly. As soon as I sign the deal, I fly off and do a week in another state, and I'm still doing a lot of traveling. And it was maybe a week after I was laying in my hotel room and you could scrape me off the ceiling. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just got all my dreams, you know, it happened. And I fit into Vegas so quickly. It was like, all of a sudden I just felt like it was home, you know, boom. And I don't really think about, you know, it's hilarious. People are like, were you nervous? And it just never occurred to me that it would not work. Never, never once did I think, gosh, what if this, you know, I knew it was going to work. I really, truly, I'm not being arrogant. I'm just saying I had worked so hard and I had seen the way people around the country responded to my show. Everyone who saw my show, once I started mixing the ventriloquism and impersonations, everyone went, oh, that's incredible. So, and then of course I went on America's Got Talent, won the show. I saw how America responded. I knew that people were going to come from all over, and as long as I keep the show fresh and I keep myself on my toes and keep things exciting and fresh, and I, you know, I've already got an Omarosa joke in the show, you know, so when something big happens in the world, it goes in the show. And so that people go, oh my gosh, that just happened today. You know, I've got a tribute to Aretha tonight, you know. So you keep up with those things, and people know you're working hard to give them the best show. And I think they're just always going to love it. You know, they're always going to enjoy it. So never occurred to me that it was not going to work. And it's been amazing.
What do you love about Las Vegas the place of Las Vegas that maybe you didn't realize was here until you spent some time?
Well, the best part of it is I love to eat. And I think, I'm not many people like to eat, right? Right. We all love eating, right? And so, in the last few years, it used to be you'd come here for the $1.99 ham and eggs, and that was good too. Or, it's a 99-cent shrimp cocktail. And now, like, the greatest chefs in the world are here, and they're making this incredible food. So that's amazing. And then this is the place where, which is why I wanted my own theater and why I wanted to be here. This is where the greatest entertainers on the planet come. So my favorite part is the fact that Celine Dion, the legend of legends, and if you've seen her show, she's inhuman. I mean, her vocals are not human. That's ridiculous. Nobody should be that perfect. Nobody should be able to sing that perfectly and never even come close to hitting a wrong note. It's ridiculous. And she's right next door. That's the best, isn't it? I mean, and the greatest artists of all time come here. And I love it when they come here and get a residency, because it's like, wow, this is, it really makes me realize what an honor it is for me to be able to maintain and sustain a show. Because the greatest of the greatest of the greats, Elton John, it's just incredible. And that's the best part.
We were just talking yesterday about your neighbors in the Mirage, the Boys to Men. How amazing they are.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the biggest selling R&B group of all time play my theater.
Yeah.
Every time I see them, they go, hey, thanks for letting us use your theater. And I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah,
and I mean, Ray Romano plays my theater. Jay Leno plays my theater. It's like, oh, these legends. It's just, I live a surreal life. It's a cool life. It's a surreal one, though.
What's next?
TV, yeah. I'm working on I've got several TV things. I've been flying to and from L.A. 3 to 4 times a week now to talk to every TV studio, and it's definitely going to happen. We just don't know where yet, but so I got a lot of cool ideas.
Awesome, man.
So you'll be seeing me on TV soon.
Attaboy. Attaboy.
I think it is time for the Vegas you need. This is where we give some recommendations to you listener people out there about cool Vegas stuff that you need to check out. Terry, what is your pick today?
My favorite is the High Roller there at the Link for many reasons. One, it's sentimental. I met my wife. I called her to come to Vegas. I wanted to wine and dine her. She wasn't my wife at the time. I just met her. And I wanted to wine and dine her. So I took her to the top of the Eiffel Tower at Paris here. And then we got to, that's what was so cool to be able to eat in the Eiffel Tower, the real Eiffel Tower. And then right after that, well, we went to see the Jersey Boys. And then I took her to the High Roller and I kissed her on the top of the High Roller. And I've been on that thing 4 times and I just love it. And I still want to do this thing where you can order a bar where you get all your friends. And everybody drinks as much as they want, as long as it's like a 45-minute trip.
Yeah.
And everybody drinks as much as they want on that. And I haven't done that, but that's definitely coming.
I'm coming with you.
Yeah, no kidding. And everybody drinks as much as they want. But I will definitely be taking a car to that. I'm not going to drive.
We're Ubering.
Yeah.
Lyft.
Or Uber, yeah. I do both Uber and Lyft. Love it. But that would be my pick. I think that's a cool thing. And it's just such a spectacular thing to be able to see the city below you. And I kind of, another little thing is, I get to see my Mirage, and I get to see my video playing on their marquee.
And so from it. Yeah.
It gives it that little extra of, hey, look, that's me.
Hey, there I am. I am going with, I'm going to go with a historical site today. I'm going to go with the Hoover Dam.
Ooh.
I think we forget how close the Hoover Dam is. And how cool it is to just walk out on that bridge, which is recently new, right? Like that renovation, how old is that now since they put that bridge in there?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but it's not old. It's not that new.
See, you talked me into it. I've never done that.
So,
I'm gonna do it.
You don't realize how close it is. It's an easy drive. And then you get out on that bridge, and it's pretty remarkable. And, My parents are pushing 80. They're coming up to 80 years old, and we did it the last time they were here. And it was just a neat moment where you walk out there and you go, that's the Hoover Dam.
Wow.
And you get back in the car and get an ice cream cone and go home.
You had me at ice cream cone.
Yeah, ice cream in the Hoover Dam. That's my thing. And then you can also take the tour. You can go in it. We didn't do that. But again, talking about how much we love Vegas with the restaurants and the chefs and the shows and the entertainment, everything. The Hoover Dam, man, is right down the street. So that's my Vegas you need today. It's the Hoover Dam. Get in the car, take a trip.
Good choices.
What do you got, Brian?
Good choices, guys. Since you both picked monuments and then found a way to talk about eating and drinking on those monuments, I'm going to pick one of my favorite places to eat and drink, and that is the restaurant Other Mama. It's a kind of Japanese oyster bar and raw bar on the west side of town on Durango Drive. Very laid back in there. Kind of feels like you're at a beach. But the food is strip quality and beyond, I would say. And they have excellent cocktails there as well, which is very important.
You're writing that down, BJ, right? My assistant.
Other Mama.
I'm going.
It is.
You talk amazing. I can't wait. I love that amazing kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I just found out I liked oysters.
Oh, dude, I've never
liked oysters. And I was on the East Coast in Boston. And this guy's like, I got you some oysters. Like, I don't like oysters. Just try one. And I'm like, these are so good. So I love oysters now. So yeah, go figure.
Mama.
Good call, brother. I got to do it.
Terry, thanks again for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you on our show. Terry, of course, performs with all those other people at the Terry Fader Theater at the iconic Mirage Resort. Is it 7:30 p.m. Monday to Thursday?
Monday to Thursday and select Fridays and Saturdays. I performed last Saturday and then the Saturday before. Many, many Saturdays and Fridays I'll do, just depending on when they, you know, but of course they got Boys to Men in there. And when they're not performing, I'm in there. So, I love having the weekends off because that's when I travel. Like I said, I'm going to
travel and see other things.
Mississippi this week, yeah. I also get to take my show to people who can't travel. I get a lot of letters from people, like you said, your parents are in their 80s.
Yeah.
I'm like, my mom is, you know, she can't travel. And I'm like, I tell my agent, I said, book me a show in that area so they can bring their parents.
That's great.
So that's why I do it.
We didn't even talk about this, Terry. You are the presenting sponsor of the USA Hockey Warrior Classic,
yes,
which brings teams of veterans together to play sled hockey, and that is happening October 4th to the 7th at City National Arena in downtown Summerlin, home of the Vegas Golden Knights.
So exciting. How cool is that? Yeah, I'm very involved in charity and especially military charities, but we have the Terry Fader Foundation. And 100% of the profits of everything I sell, whether it's at the Mirage or whether it's on the road or on my website, goes to the Terry Fader Foundation, and it all goes to charity. So we're very, very proud of that. And so that's one of my things that I'm working with this year. Very, I can't wait.
That's going to be awesome.
These are amazing guys too.
I mean, you've been a huge supporter of the community here in Vegas, and I can speak on the side with everything we do here with Monday's Dark. You've always supported us and have been so willing to give your time and talent, and it's been great. And I know we're gonna talk about bringing the foundation of the space and maybe doing a show here with you here. That would be fantastic.
It's fun because I'll bring a couple of puppets but it'll mostly be me singing. I'll get up there and I'll do 30 impressions and I'll do full songs. And I'll have I'll get my band. We'll get the band. They dig it. We love it. And we just get up there and I'll be like, hey, let's do Styx. You know, oh, let's do Garth Brooks. You know, let's do Guns N' Roses. And man, we just go right in. I do it all. It sounds just like, you know, in fact, my Styx is so good. I was at a fair one time and Styx was performing and I was playing the little stage and I started into Styx and I swear to you, people started running thinking Styx had started. My Dennis DeYoung it sounds just like him. And people were running because they thought Styx had started. That's and it was great. Me. So great, so man. We'll do that here.
That'll I love
fun.
It.
This is a great place. It.
Speaking of the space, Monday's Dark is back on September 10th and 17th. We've also been telling everybody to go get their tickets to see John Lloyd Young here at the space September 14th to 15th. I just talked to him the other day. You can see my interview with him at LasVegasMagazine.com. Mark, what else is going on here at the space?
Yeah, you mentioned John. Terry, we're bringing in John Lloyd Young. He won the Tony for Frankie Valli and Jersey Boys. He was the original Frankie on Broadway and then went on to play the role in Clint Eastwood's movie. And he's coming here for two nights. I just booked, speaking of voices, Michael Winslow from Police Academy fame. He did all the voices in all the Police Academy movies. So Michael will be at the space for one night on October 12th. He's a riot.
Love him.
Yeah. So please, if you want to come join us. And then on the 24th and 25th, another huge Broadway star coming to grace our stage at the space, Shoshana Bean. You would remember her as the Green Witch in Wicked. She also just sold out the Apollo in New York City for 2,500 people. So those three acts right there, John Lloyd Young, September 14th and 15th, Michael Winslow on October 12th, Shoshana Bean the 24th and 25th. Just the space is starting to jam in the fall. It's going to be a busy fall for us. And then obviously the Monday's Darks twice a month for a different local charity every time, $10,000 raised in 90 minutes. So go to mondaysdark.com, thespacelv.com, and, that's it. We're cruising over here.
You can find every episode of All the Vegas at lasvegasweekly.com or use the totally obvious shortcut of allthevegas.com. I like that one better. You should also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. Drive carefully. Come back soon.
In no sunshine, just gone.